We actually met in 1985.
How did that go down?
The first arranged meeting went quite wrong.
I look back now and see if it's totally God's grace. We have four children.
You guys have been homeschooling your kids for the past 20, 23 years.
There were resources that were put on there by the Department for Education, primary curriculum and secondary curriculum.
My parents have been married for about 80 years, I would say.
Yeah.
How does that go down with you?
I can be out for a walk sometimes, or we could be in a meeting or in a room with lots of people. You know, and I can look across the room at Dave and just think, wow, that's my husband, and I just love him so much.
Relationships should improve as they grow older.
Today we live in a society where people don't have a lot of time to stop, sit down, talk together about things.
You chase after them, you find out what they like, you make a choice, time or his mummy. After 35 years, we've reached the pinnacle of decision making.
What's up, my friend? Welcome to this episode of DRB. Before we jump straight into today's episode, I'd love to specially invite you to take 10 seconds and join our 21,000 plus smart friends on emails. I've been sending out emails for the last couple of years, and most of my friends will always write back and say these are like the favorite things that they look forward to on the internet every month. And so once you join our 21,000 plus smart friends using the link in the description below, we're going to send you out a mind-blowing email once every month for free. And you're going to get an email every time that an amazing episode like this goes live. So if you're joining us for the very first time or you're new to everything that we do, I'd love to say special welcome. Don't forget to hit the follow button wherever you listen to your podcast. And please check out the links in the description for very helpful resources. So Dave and Claire West, thank you for joining us today. I've heard a lot about your story, heard a lot about your journey, and that's why I thought it would be very interesting to have this conversation. Married for 30 years, over 30 years, I would say, you're going to clarify me on that. And homeschooling your kids for at least 23 years. So thank you for joining us today. Could you please kick this off by introducing yourselves to our audience for those who don't know you yet?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us. We feel very privileged to be part of this. And I hope it's a tremendous blessing to everyone who hears it.
So I'm Claire, been married to Dave for 35 years. We have four children. Our eldest is 32, Jess. Second daughter down, Rachel, is 29. She has three children of her own. So we have three grandsons, Joy and his light. And then our eldest son, Joel, he's married to Melissa and they live in Canada. And our youngest son, Josh, he's 18 and he's studying in Coventry University at the moment.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask, what was the earliest memory of you guys meeting? Just to have a bit backstory on your union and how all this started. What's the backstory?
Oh, on us meeting. Wow. Okay, so that goes way back into the 1980s. So we actually met in 1985. So ancient history. And we met through communicating on the CB radio. So we both had that as a hobby, and we love to chat and meet new people on the radio, and we'd make contact. And we had quite a few chats before we had a face-to-face meeting.
Yep.
But I have to say our first arranged meeting went quite wrong. We arranged to meet at a specific place, you know, near the post office, near the petrol station, okay? Mm-hmm. And so little did we understand at the time, there were two post offices near two petrol stations. So I went to one and Claire went to the other and we missed each other completely. So we got back onto the radio that night and, where were you? You stood me up, you know? But fortunately, we worked out what had happened and arranged to meet again, and the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah.
Right, but I was also going to ask, at the time when you guys just met, what was it that you were looking forward to? Because I mean, for us right now, we're young, we're youth, mostly Gen Zs, and then the those who are a bit over 30s. And sometimes we're meeting people who could be potentially a spouse, and we have some specific things that we were looking for. So I'm going to let each of you speak. Maybe what do you think you were looking for at the time?
I think I was looking for somebody who was fun, who had a sense of adventure, somebody also who was very caring and gentle. And I saw that in Dave almost at the first meeting.
Oh, that's rather sweet. That's not the first time I've heard that. I'll pretend it is. yeah, I think I was looking for fun. You know, I wasn't yet 18 when we met, so I was looking for fun, not necessarily looking for settling down. Neither of us were following Jesus at that time. So yeah, we had a view on life that was slightly different to how it is now. And so, yeah, we were looking for fun and lots of laughter, lots of adventures, wondering where life would take us, I guess. Not really making it. I didn't have any specific plans, to be honest, at that stage in my life. Everything changed when we met Jesus. All of our particular ideas and dreams, and he started bringing them into focus then, I think. So, yeah, everything changed for us.
Right. It's not very common that we have stories of two people getting together and then they have a conversion story, right? If you understand what I mean. Usually it is when two people get together, you are now turning into Christianity. This is not the man I married, or this is not a woman I married, or something different about you. But the thing that's unique about your story for you guys is you both made a decision. How did that go down? And what was it like, you both deciding at the same time we want to become Christians?
I think it was God's. I look back now and see that it was totally God's grace, because I think, you know, if one of us had become a Christian and the other one didn't, you know, how would that be? Would we be able to still remain in relationship and yet be true to Jesus? And I don't know, because, you know, we weren't in that position. But God led us very gently through a series of events to a small, very small church, quite an old-fashioned church, beautiful little church, where there was a guy at the front giving a preach. And at the end of the service, he just sort of gave what we'd call an altar call, asked people if they wanted to invite Jesus into their lives. And Dave and I were sat next to each other, but we didn't touch each other, we didn't nudge, we didn't look at each other, shall we not? We just both stood up separately, but together at the same time. And I just, yeah, it had to be nothing but, you know, a miracle, really. So, yeah.
And I think that fed into some of our decision-making after that, you know, after that event. You have to ask the question, well, if this is going to happen to both of us at the same time, without conferring, making the decision very clearly to follow Jesus at the same time, that obviously will have an impact on what we understand our relationship to be. And, you know, God's doing it for both of us.
Yeah.
So when we were asked later, not too much later, by some really lovely Christian people in the local church here, we were asked, are you sure that you want to get married to each other, because you've had this dramatic experience with Jesus? And we said, yeah, we're sure. We can't see how it can be interpreted any other way. You know, we want to be together. And it's because I think we did so much together before we became Christians that you know, God just sort of picked us up and in that moment said, all right, these two, let's have this. he knows what he's doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My parents have been married for about 80 years, I would say. And I know very much from their experience that having to make the right decisions agree on a decision, on a particular decision together is really, really important, not just to the relationship that build between them, but how we as kids look at them and perceive where the family is going with the unity that plays around it. Sometimes something happens and we as kids, we feel it. We know the atmosphere, you know, things are not right. And so I wanted to ask you guys, how How does that go down with you having to make some of the decisions? Are there periods where maybe one person wants something else and another person wants something else, but how are you able to find the balance and still making sure that you're keeping the family going?
Well, I think if I can say that when we've been called in to do missionary work, I think Dave has often been the visionary, so he can sort of see, yes, we could do that, let's make it happen. And because I'm the homemaker, if you like, the mum, then I often think, well, how will this work and how will that affect the kids and how will that, you know, practically how will that work? But we've done that several times, but we've always managed to, so I'll talk my issues through with Dave, you know, how is that going to work practically? And Dave has always kind of waited for me, if you like, to sort of catch up with, I guess you could say catch up with what God's doing, but it's never felt like I've never felt pushed into anything. I don't know, Dave will speak for himself, but I don't think he's ever felt like he's been dragged back because of my slowness in being prepared to do what God's calling us to do. So we've always managed to come together to make the decision for what God's calling us to do, even if, you know, I've been a bit slower coming to that point. But yeah, there's always been a sense of unity. We've never wanted to do anything that has made the person feel uncomfortable in, as you know, we're going to do this whether you want to do it or not, we're just going to do it sort of thing. So there's never been that sort of leadership from Dave in that way. It's never been a pushing or a forcing thing. It's always been a coming together and making the decision together.
Yeah, I think that there have been, maybe because of the foundation of our relationship, of wanting to be together, wanting to do things together, and then how we actually came to be Christians at the same time. So it was clearly a together thing. Maybe that's formed a foundation for us when it comes to decision making, that, well, if God wants us to do it, then we have to have unity on it. What's the point in pushing ahead with something unless we have unity on it? And that's not to say that we put one another before what God says, but that we're, you know, there's a beautiful verse, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And I think the J.B. Phillips translation said, fit in with one another out of reverence. And I think we've always sort of tried to fit in with one another, however long that takes. You know, sometimes I heard someone talking on the Israelites wandering around in the desert and how fast they had to go. Well, they were families, they were small children. So they had to go at the pace of the slowest. You know, they couldn't push, otherwise they'd be leaving people behind. And so, you know, we started with a foundation of not wanting to leave one another behind, not wanting to rush ahead. If we're going to do this, we're going to do it together. So we've got to agree. And so we waited for one another until we found that unity.
Yeah. And then we saw that God blessed that tremendously, in the way that we could look back and see actually the timing when we did start things, or we did go ahead and walk out, step out into different things he was calling us to do. Those times were perfect. So, you know, although I might have slowed things down or Dave wanted a bit quicker, the actual timing of the doing the things that we did was, we could look back and see definitely it was just God's perfect timing. So, yeah.
And after 35 years, just last week, we were sort of walking along and I said, do you know, I think we might do this, you know, whatever it was, X, Y, Z. And Claire said, I was having exactly the same thought. So after 35 years, we've reached the pinnacle of decision making.
I have a question for you at this point. I kind of look at it, and correct me if I'm wrong on this. I mean, I've never been married before. That's why I'm asking a question to those who are married. But I've always kind of had a sense that relationships should improve as they grow older. But I don't necessarily know if that's what we see in the world right now. Because for me, I feel like the more I know somebody, like if I spend a year close to you, if I spend 2, 3, 4 years, the more I should be able to at least in a way predict and understand how you are in many situations. And that helps me to be able to live with you, to be able to understand who you are as a person, your likes, your dislikes, and just again, moving together, just being together sometimes, even with best friends, we see that, like with my friend Joseph, just the fact that we think alike and we've been around each other, we kind of think the same. Is that the same with what you guys find in your relationship? And do you think that would be a good thought to have in approaching relationships, that the older it gets, the better it should become?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, I can be out for a walk sometimes, or we could be in a meeting or in a room with lots of people, you know, and I can look across the room at Dave and just think, wow, that's my husband, and I just love him so much. And you know, the depth of our love for one just grows deeper more than every year, but you know, it just grows deeper. There's always more. You know, I often think in the Christian faith, you know, we think we might know Jesus and have a good relationship, but there's always more. And I think that's the same for any relationship, and especially for a marriage. There's always more to learn. There's always more understanding to be gained. There's always more forgiveness to, you know, to accept one with another. I just think, yeah, to be in a place where you think you've arrived would be like a relationship would be stale in that way. I think there has to always be more that you're looking for.
And I think that God's put something in us that has that desire for more, to pursue more, because he is so infinite and so big, and we only get a tiny glimpse of him. And he's put something, you know, it says God put eternity into the hearts of men, it says in the Bible. And I think that something of that eternity, of always being more, always being something to discover, that's true in all areas of life. And that, you know, so many people have dissatisfaction if they get stuck in a rut or the relationship goes stale, because God's given us a desire to pursue more, more intimacy, more depth, more understanding. And I think what you say about the relationship getting better, you know, there's all sorts of wiser people than me have spoken on levels of a relationship, you know, that you start off with small talk and then you get into sharing a bit more detail, and you're going up these steps towards a place of, the top step is intimacy, is you know, and we all desire intimacy, but the aspects of relationship, again, wiser men than me have said there are four main areas of relationship: love, trust, respect, and understanding. And I think love is the thing that motivates us to want to get higher up the steps of levels of communication so that we can go for intimacy. Trust is something that's very fragile. It can be broken easily. It takes a long time to build. So time spent together and having relationship together builds the trust, which is a vital part of any relationship. Understanding takes the longest, so the more time we spend with somebody, the more understanding we gain, and very often the more understanding we have, that develops that more of the motivation to push on towards a greater level of intimacy, because when people open up to us and we gain understanding, we feel we understand them more, and the cry of the human heart is to be understood. And so there's a wonderful mutuality about developing understanding in a relationship, and respect just grows as you sort of witness how a person lives, their value system. Respect, I think, can be earned, but it doesn't always need to be earned. I think there's a respect for a position or a Claire respects me as her husband. That started way back, but then respect grows as you witness the ethics, morals, and values of a person. You develop a greater respect for them too. But yes, I think relationships do get better with age.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question from a younger generation to an older generation. And we are kids, we're growing up, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I believe that as a kid growing up, every time I have to adopt a value or a virtue for myself, I am also willing to test it with the waters, with experiences, before I decide and go, this is something that I'm going to adopt as a value, because I'm at the point, I believe that I'm at the point of growing where I can't just know it all. And so for me, sometimes I feel that even as we start to date, gearing up towards marriage, I still have a traditional perspective of what relationships should look like. And I'm asking because I want to know your perspective on this and what do you think is the right approach, where I believe that in a relationship, which is, I mean, when we talk about dating, definitely leading up to marriage and as well in the marriage, the thing I hear you guys say a lot is that everyone knows their position. And coming back to me making the point of being a traditional person, I think of it as, I believe, well, this is my opinion, I believe that a man should be the leader, but also I think that the man has to earn the right to live, the right to lead. It is the point where you go, I, Claire, I've seen Dave lead us through several instances, or even just one, two, three, and I go, now I can trust Dave. I can trust that his leadership for us as a team is always going to be the right one. So do you think, as a young person growing up, is that a good approach to have when talking about relationships? Or how do you think that could best approach? And I'm happy to be corrected.
I think it's a biblical model. And I think it's one that gets misunderstood very easily and twisted. Which saddens my heart, because, you know, when the Bible talks about, you know, the husband being the head of the wife, it doesn't mean he's to tell her what to do and boss her about and she's lower than him because he's higher than her. I think that's a really misunderstood concept, and one that saddens me greatly, because I think people think about that and then they think that, you know, it's all about equality. And, you know, and I think when the Bible says that, you know, the man has to love his wife as Christ loves the church, that is a very high calling indeed. And that's not to be taken lightly at all. So I don't see it. I think yes, I agree with what you're saying. And I don't see it as, you know, the man leads and the man makes all the decisions, because, you know, you are a team together. We see ourselves as a team, very much so. You know, you say, well, does the book stop with Dave? Well, yes, sometimes it would do. But then if I really disagreed with something, we'd talk it through, we'd work it through. We'd pray it through, we'd think, well, you know, what is the sticking point? Why are we having this issue? So we'd be very open to that. But I'm quite comfortable to say that, yes, Dave is the head of the home. But I see that in a very positive light, not a negative one. And like I say, I think it has been twisted in this generation and in other generations to be something that God never intended it to be.
And if I take my role seriously as head of the home, then I'm going to, you know, as Christ loves the church, or Christ laid down his life. Christ was the servant king. You know, it might say wives submit to your husbands, but I think husbands actually have the harder job in actually loving their wives as Christ loves the church.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to take that seriously, I'm going to approach it seeing Claire as my equal in every way. I'm going to approach it in wanting to serve Claire as Christ serves the church. And that's, as Claire says, it's a high calling. And it's a great responsibility that God gives to us as guys. I think it is a traditional view. But all traditions aren't wrong. You know, just because something's traditional, yes, it can be challenged. And it's also worked for millennia. There is an element of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, we follow a traditional model. And who says we've got it right?
But, you know, the Bible also says submit to one another, doesn't it? You know, we said that earlier. And I think that is just as important, that, you know, there'll be some things that, you know, I might make a decision on or want to make a decision on and Dave might not agree with, but you might look at it from my viewpoint and say, okay, well, we'll go with what you say then. That's fine. So it's not always just because it's, you know, submitting to the man because he's the head of the house kind of thing. I just think it doesn't mean we have to always do everything he says and do, you know, follow it all and that sort of thing, because that's not being led, that's being dragged, and that's not what Jesus meant at all when he said that.
And if I'm not taking into consideration what Claire thinks and feels and believes things when making any kind of decision, and I'm just saying, no, we're doing it this way because this is what I think is right, well, that's not me being a servant to Claire. That's not me submitting to her. So I think there is something in the traditional spiritual responsibility, the kind of the way that God has created us to be. But there's so much about equality that is also in any marriage relationship that cannot be ignored.
I love how you guys break it down. And I would say the final words from me is that leadership is service. Because you, Dave, as you understand your role as the leader, but you understand that in your position as the leader, you are serving. You're serving Claire. Claire also understands that whatever, this also the understanding that whatever Dave is doing is for the good of the team. And again, taking into consideration each other's feeling. I think that I'm having a good conversation. For whoever is going to be watching this, I genuinely think that it's going to be helpful to them just as it is helpful to me. I wanted us to talk about homeschooling. You guys have been homeschooling your kids for the past 23 years?
When did we start? 95? Yeah. And we only educated this up to the end of secondary school, so when the kids were 16. And of course, Josh is now 18, so that was just 2 years ago we stopped. So yeah, 95 to 21.
How did that idea come about? Well, just walk me through the start of it. Let's talk about even the conversation. How did it come about, Claire? We're going to start homeschooling the kids. How does that conversation start?
Okay, so we were traveling with a youth with a mission, a Christian organization, and we were in New Zealand when Jess, our first, turned four. And so I think I'd already started doing some just simple reading and writing with her. She wasn't really due to go to school just yet. And then we moved to the States for a while and met a family who were homeschooling. And like I say, I'd already started doing some basics with Jess. And we met this family who were homeschooling, and their kids were teenagers, and they seemed to be doing really well. And we wanted to travel more. We wanted to have the flexibility to be able to move about if we wanted to, if we felt God was calling us to do that. And so we began the homeschooling journey. And when we came back to England, we didn't know whether we'd be doing more traveling, so we thought, well, we'll do it for a little while, and we'll see how it works. I loved it. I loved, especially the early years. It was just such a joy for me to do that. So I was doing the majority of it in the early years. And then when Rachel was born, our second daughter, we thought, well, it worked for the first one. Let's keep going. And we prayed about it every time. You know, God, is this right? I believe when you enter homeschooling, it has to be a calling. It has to be a strong calling to do so, because it's not always easy. You know, it's a huge commitment. Not just the preparing the lessons and the finding the resources, but the teaching and the giving them the time to do that. And I look back over the 25 years and think, would I have done it differently? And I think there might have been some things I did slightly differently, but I would definitely have done it again. Obviously, 25 years ago, there wasn't the same sort of resources there are now online, and you know, all the sort of digital stuff that you can get your hands on now is very, very different to how we started. There was no financial help at all, so there was no support in that way. But that didn't stop us doing what we wanted to do. We just made the decision that this is what we want to do. You know, it was always something that was a decision that we made as a family before the Lord. And none of them ever said they wanted to go to school. And you could say, well, they didn't know what school was like, so they didn't really know what choice they had to make, you know. But we tried to make it as open for them as we could to make that decision, and they all chose to be homeschooled. So, yeah.
Was any part of this decision ever motivated by the fact that you didn't want your kids to learn some certain things in a general education, like in a general education setting?
I think yes. Certainly, there was an element. I wouldn't be able to put a percentage on it, but I think there was certainly part of the decision was, you know, we just don't want to buy into the same sort of world value system of you're only You're only a good person if you're productive. You know, that's you know, what is the what the schools teach about productivity, and I think it comes from top down. It comes from government. It comes
when they're older. I think when they're little, not so. But
you know, most nations' economy is based on how productive a nation is, right? So we have to. We're almost sort of caught in a hamster wheel. We've got to keep the economy going, and so we've got to be productive. And this the push to get mums out to work and provide childcare. But we certainly, when we were considering it and putting it before the Lord and praying about it, we certainly felt that the character of our kids was far more important than any academic achievement that they might have. And that's what we felt. You know, God created family for a reason. He put children into families. He gave us our four children for a purpose, for a reason. And so we wanted to pursue the very best that we believed we could give to our kids. And I think it's always the very best we can give to our kids is always going to come from parents who are submitting to God himself and saying, what do we do and how do we do it? Did we make mistakes? Yeah, absolutely. But we did the best that we felt we would do, we needed to do at the time. And I think that's part of the human experience, isn't it? You know, we live life, we make mistakes. Do we do everything right? No, we do the best. We do what we believe is right at the time. And God is big enough and gracious enough to lead us on and to teach us and to take us round the mountain again if we need to learn it again. for sure, there's an element of I want to protect my kids. You know, any parent who never has a feeling of wanting to protect their kids, there's probably something wrong gone on in their childhood, I would think, because that's a huge part of what a parent is protection. But of course, there is such a thing as overprotection, which is why when Claire says it's if you're going to homeschool, it's not just about wrapping your kids in cotton wool and protecting them from the big bad world out there, because you've got to prepare them for the big bad world, because one day they're going to live in it. We're big fans of intergenerational. You know, everything can be intergenerational. Intergenerational learning is absolutely amazing. You know, you see sometimes. Is it in the Netherlands where they mix like kindergarten kids with old people living in old people's homes, and they kind of learn together and have fun together, and it clearly has a massive impact on their mental health and their development. I think just putting people in their own age group and expecting them to learn what they need to learn to prepare them for life, I think that's a faulty idea.
Totally agree, because I think even personally, I've had instances of someone say, I think you've been mingling with older people or with elder people. I'm like, yeah, I get it. That's where that comes from. And they're good compliments, to be honest, but I could also tell in that moment that that's not something that I just learned from my peers. It came from interacting with elderly people and also just being open to interact with different people. Let's talk about the curriculum for what you guys were teaching them. How do you know what to teach them? Where do you find it? And what's that process like?
Well, the primary years are much easier.
Yeah.
You don't need equipment and all of the textbooks and all of that necessarily. But, you know, when we started, the internet did actually exist. So,
All those years ago.
You know, we had little boxes that made funny noises when you wanted to access the internet, but the old dial-up. But it did exist, and there were resources that were put on there by the Department for Education. They would publish the entire primary curriculum and secondary curriculum. As far as the Department of Education were concerned, it was the information was there. We never really wanted to create super kids. We never wanted to sort of create big-brained, incredibly academic. We just wanted them to know, you know, if they had an idea of sort of a life they wanted to pursue, a career they wanted to pursue, how do we prepare them for that?
Yeah.
Which, of course, is the basis of a comprehensive education. It's to give a broad base so that kids have the understanding to choose what they want to do and what they want to pursue and work out what they love doing and what they're good at.
Do you mind me asking, where does that come from? Because generally, every parent wants their kids to be, every parent is like, the kid has to grow to become a genius and all that. Where does that come from? With you, with the way you sound, it looks like you've done a lot of introspection and I don't want to raise super kids, but I want to raise okay kids. Where does that mentality come from?
I think I've seen lots of people, say lots of our friends have kids that have gone through school and they've been bullied and found things really, really difficult. And we wanted to give our kids a love of learning rather than striving for excellence. And some people might say that that's...
No, striving for excellence is good.
No, but perfection. Yeah, sorry, so striving for perfection. And so, you know, we really wanted to give them lots of different experiences as they learnt, and you know, we took them through lots of different projects and history and geography and science and all the subjects they would have learnt at school. So we tried to make as broad an education as we could within the home. Sometimes we pulled other people in to help with different things at different times. But yeah, we wanted it to make it, and you know, lifestyle, we believe in lifestyle discipleship. So, you know, we might be in the middle of the day and I might receive a phone call that, you know, somebody's sick and they had to go to hospital. So I just stopped what we were doing. We just gather around and we pray. And then, okay, then we get on with the rest of whatever we were doing. I think it gave us space to be able to, yeah, do things like stop and talk about things when issues arose. Because, you know, often when you hear of kids that have gone to school and they'll come home and, you know, say, oh, what did you do today? You know, what happened? They just sort of say, oh, stuff, you know, and that seems to be the common phrase. And sometimes they can tell you details and tell you things that happened, but... for us, it worked for us. It's not for everybody.
I think it's the pressure thing that we wanted to avoid. And as Claire said, that phrase, love of learning, that became the basis of everything that we did, certainly in the early years, trying to lay a foundation of, you know, if our kids don't learn everything that they need when we're teaching them, we want them to love learning enough to pursue it and go after it themselves, to know where to find the information, how to learn it. And if they love learning, then they're going to do that. And, you know, it's a lifelong learning experience, isn't it? That's what life is. It's all about learning.
When you choose to embark on a journey like that, it has, just as it has its social implications, there is also the financial implications on the family, because you go, well, I was supposed to be working with this time, and instead of working, I have to take the kids on this lesson. So how did you guys approach that, and how do you think you successfully handled the part of the finances?
That's probably the way that we were brought up. Both of us have parents who were quite careful with money. And, you know, we come from a generation where if you can't afford to buy it, then you don't buy it, apart from the big things like a house. And that's how we've lived our lives. We've lived them quite frugally. We haven't gone on expensive holidays, not because we couldn't, but because we made the genuine heartfelt choice that's a sacrifice we're willing to make so that we can live a different way. And the time, of course, is you make a choice. It's time or it's money. You know, am I going to spend my life work so that I have enough money I can then pay tutors to educate my kids? And we were fortunate enough to be led into career paths where we could be flexible with time. You know, I ended up working in the care sector, working in a children's home.
But you chose to work less hours.
And I negotiated, instead of working 40 hours a week, I negotiated 30 hours a week. But I also worked weekends, which meant that I was around during the week to be engaged with the education of our kids.
But it also meant that we had a lower wage than we would normally have had, and so we lived accordingly. So, you know, we shop carefully and, you know, buy things, mend things, and, you know, just live in a lifestyle that wasn't all about money and the next best, biggest, newest thing. But, you know, I don't feel we ever went without, or the kids ever went without anything, because they chose to work less hours, you know. I think God really blessed us in that decision to not pursue a career, and not for Dave not to climb up the career ladder and have him be working loads of overtime and hours, so he wasn't at home. He deliberately chose to work less hours to spend more time at home with the family, because that's the most important thing for us, to be able to invest into the kids while they're little. Because often people sort of say, you know, when the kids are young, you know, they work really hard and they earn, like Dave said, earn loads of money, and, you know, then they've got lots of money. But then you find, well, by the time you've earned all that money, you haven't got a relationship with your kids. Your kids have grown up, they're ready to leave home, and you don't have a relationship with them. But look, hey, you've got lots of money, but you've not got anybody to spend it on.
I wanted to ask if you, well, this is a two-ball question. If you look at your kids vis-a-vis other kids that you around you, are there any differences you kind of realize? And then the second part of the question is, if someone says to you, Dave and Claire, if you guys were to go back and relive this experience again of bringing up these children in a homeschool manner, what would you change about that experience and the approach you took to it?
When our second daughter, Rachel, went to college, so, you know, she'd been homeschooled, she was a good student, you know, and she went to college, and there would be other kids in the class, young adults, I should say, because they'd be 17. Yeah. There'd be young adults in the class, and they'd be on their phones, and they'd be chatting to one another, and she would get really frustrated with them, that, you know, we're here to learn, why can't you be quiet, you're disrupting my learning experience, and, you know, and that, I don't think she made any great friends doing that, but but, you know, that was certainly a difference, because she had the love of learning.
What would you change about the experience, about the approach?
It's difficult. I think, I guess maybe as they were older, I might have tried to give them more experiences outside of the home. You know, things like science, for instance, we weren't able to do very many experiments. I mean, we did the best that we could with the equipment that we had in the home, but I guess they missed out on things like, you know, big exciting science experiments, PE, so physical education. You know, we did stuff with them, we took them swimming and things like that, and they were involved. Like, the girls did dance classes, and then Joel did gymnastics, and Joff did football and things like that, so we tried to do some things with them.
They didn't do a lot of team sports.
No, they didn't do a lot of team sports. So that's probably something that they missed out on, I guess. So if I could go back and do it again, I'd perhaps try and maybe mix with other sports, try and find other sports things that they could do to mix more in that sort of a way.
I think one thing I might change is to develop a loose curriculum of faith that you could weave into the home education experience as well, that'd be a bit more deliberate. I think we focused on the experience, so giving them experience of mission, and giving them experience of worship, giving them experience of Christian leadership, creating that environment where faith could grow. But there wasn't, I don't think, that we were particularly deliberate about how we approached their discipleship. We kind of went with the flow and then dealt with things as they came up.
I guess we lived it more than we taught it, and so I guess that's good, but maybe it wasn't balanced enough with the teaching of what we believe. So we lived our faith, but whether we taught it enough, I don't know.
There was a foundation of experience.
Yeah.
And then, well, okay, how do we interpret that? How does God help us interpret that in the light of the experience, rather than the foundation of, you know, these are the foundational Christian principles that we need, and then how do we experience that?
So I have a junior sister and a junior brother. That's a bit of my story. And I'm not their parents. My parents are still, they still bring them up in the way they should. But I'm very much involved in their upbringing, a lot of it. And even in the aspect of helping them acquire skills to, I'm very much active when it comes to how I want them to grow up as well, because I see it as my responsibility as a senior brother who is at least being exposed to life in a different way than my parents have been, to hold their hands through. And in my experience dealing with both of them, and I will share just personally, because I'm building up towards the question. When something happens to my junior sister, and I approach it differently to how I would approach it if it happened to my junior brother. Sometimes, let's say, for example, he calls me, he needs X amount of money, and I would tell him to go out and work. My junior brother, I ask him, go out and work. You're a man. You have to face life. It has to hit you. You have to get to the point where you push your limits, because life will hit you. You go out there, you have to struggle. But my junior sister, I need money for X and X. The first thing is, what's the last money I gave you? I have used all this. Okay, how do we get more for you? How do you approach bringing up the children? As your kids were growing up, what's one value first that you wanted to impart into them? But most importantly, what was the approach to raising the girl child vis-a-vis the approach to raising the boy child?
I think it is very different, very clearly. I think one of the things that we really wanted to instill in our girls is to give them a good role model of what it is to have. So like our relationship between Dave and I, that we're the same inside the house as we are outside the house, and we were the same in front of the kids as we were, you know, when we were on our own. And just the way that we love each other, we wanted to really show that to them and live that. And that's what we did. We didn't try to do that. We just did that. And I think that gave them a really good value as to, this is how a woman should be treated by a man. Because I think often in the, you know, you can go out into the world and it's not like that at all. So we wanted to set that precedent of, you know, this is how you should be treated, with respect, with love, with honour, with dignity, with compassion and tenderness, you know, all those things that come from God. We wanted to show the girls especially that that's how you treat a woman. And also, as we were doing that, we were showing the boys, you know, if and when you get married, or when and if you get married, you know, we want you to treat your wives, you know, like dad has treated mom. So yes, I think it is different but kind of similar in that respect, with that, would say.
Yeah, I think it perhaps goes slightly in line with your question about traditional roles as well. That, you know, are we perpetuating the traditional roles by teaching our boys to be, you know, be a man? And, you know, I think there are specific roles that God gives to males and specific roles that God gives to females, and that doesn't mean that. But the females can't make logical,
sensible
decisions. You know, it doesn't mean that guys have to ignore their emotions and that girls are always emotional. You know, that's one of the things that's often thrown out. Well, no, we're equal. There is an equality, but we are wired differently. You know, we do have, generally speaking, we do have, our brains operate differently, and you could argue, well, that's part of the traditional. That's what we've been brainwashed with. Is it nature or is it nurture? That's a bigger argument, right? But yeah, I think we did treat our girls and our boys differently, and I think there's something in that as a father, rightly or wrongly, I wanted my boys to understand the responsibility of being a guy, that actually you can express compassion, and you don't have to always think about things logically. You can be a guy who has feelings too. So yeah, I think we did do them differently. Yeah. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any other differences, to be honest.
As you were talking, your answer led me to think not just about how we should raise them, but also the role that the father as well as the mother plays in the upbringing of a child, which I think is very important. And I could say this from experience, because my parents are together, because I see them, just like Claire mentioned, the way that my father, my dad treats my mom. When I go, I want to treat my wife that way, because I look at the bond that exists between them. And without them ever asking me, without them ever saying anything like, this is how you should treat the ladies in your life, I just watch and I see, I'm like, this is what I want to do. And I think that's so profound. But I wanted to ask you, rounding this off, I wanted to ask you guys, Claire, and I'm also very aware that you're very much involved in, you have heart for marriages and families to become equipped and strengthened to move forward in all that God has for them. But in your work with most of these marriages, what's the biggest misconception you probably come across with marriages, and how do you think this could be approached differently?
I think I would say that I often find that couples miss each other. So they just, you know, relationally, in conversation, they just seem to come together, but just at a slightly different level, and they just miss each other. And I think one of the things when Dave was talking about the love, trust, respect and understanding, and I think understanding takes a long time, and sometimes we want to understand somebody straight away and we want to get it. I think it's being prepared to be in it for the long haul, if you like, to be able to take time to understand and not to just jump to conclusions. And, you know, today we live in a society where people don't have a lot of time to stop, sit down, talk together about things, because everything is very snappy and quick, and we're on to the next thing, and then tomorrow we're doing this, and next week we're doing this, and, you know, but if we don't take time to stop and talk, that's when people miss each other. And I think the more you miss each other, then that's when the, you know, things get in between the relationship.
There are so many tools that we've sort of gathered over the years from much cleverer people than us, that you know, that what Claire said about missing each other, and we talked about gender stereotypes a little bit there, and I think generally speaking, guys tend to be quite topical when they're discussing something. They want to stay on subject. If there's a problem, they want to fix it. They stay on a topical level, and generally speaking, the gals will go on a relational level. The woman may say, oh, I had a terrible day today. The guy wants to get in there, hear about it, fix it, work out the problem and fix it.
But actually, move on.
All she wants to do is be heard.
Just listen.
Yeah. So, you know, that missing each other is so, Claire's so right in what she says about that. And that's why communication is so crucial, that, you know, we printed out a picture of a floor on a little card, and we've given it to some couples and said, you know, when you have a discussion, just hold that so that you don't butt in on each other and talk over each other. So the person who's holding, you have the floor, yeah, and you hand it to the other person when you finish talking, and then you be quiet and listen to what the other person is saying. So yeah, communication is absolutely critical. Taking time, you know, you have to develop, you have to invest. If you want anything to get better, you have to invest in it. And when you first meet someone that you're attracted to, or, you know, you feel this might be the person I want to spend the rest of my life with, you don't just sort of go through the motions. You chase after them, you find out what they like, you want to get their attention by giving them what they like, by being funny, by, you know, Well, why can't that carry on through a relationship? Why can't that carry on in marriage? I think we think, well, oh, now we're married, we don't have to go to the effort. No, I'm sorry. If you want a relationship to improve, you have to put the effort and the time in to make it improve. And again, there's so many resources. You know, the Alpha Marriage course is great in just learning some of those basics of conflict resolution and communication. There's so many good resources out there. And we've, you know, we don't use it as often as we should, but there's an app called Toucan, which it kind of takes a pulse of your relationship. It does it separately and then it shares the results and says, why don't you take a look at this little video about conflict resolution? Because it seems like that's an area that needs some development. Just taking the time to say, and having the humility to say, should we give this a try? Because it might just improve our relationship. And we're always saying, you know, there's always room for improvement.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
We have a tradition on most of the interviews we've been doing recently, and it's asking our guests the final question. When all is said and done, how do you want to be remembered? As Dave and as Claire, I'll let you guys take a few seconds to answer individually.
I think for me, I want to be remembered as somebody who lived their life for Jesus. And I think in that, somebody who loves well, somebody who serves well, somebody who's fun, somebody who's generous in not financially necessary, but in time and with who they are and what they have. That's how I want to be remembered.
You know, I'm really moved by a song, I think it's by Casting Crowns, called Only Jesus. And I don't want to sound holier than thou or, you know, some kind of super righteous, but I'm so moved by this song that the chorus says, and I don't care.
I don't want to leave a legacy.
I don't care if they remember me, only Jesus. Mm-hmm. So honestly, I'm not that bothered about people remembering me, but if there was anything, it would be, yeah, Dave was somebody who, it was a signpost to Jesus. It would be a wonderful way.
Dave and Claire, I want to thank you guys for bringing all this wealth of experience. I've enjoyed this conversation and I truly have a lot to take away from it. And I want to say thank you for accepting to do this and for sharing selflessly. I do appreciate you both.
Thank you. With all of our faults and failures, we don't have all the answers. Many of the things that we've done and said, we've made many, many mistakes. But thank you for having us. We really appreciate your questions and your heart to help others.
Yeah, thank you, Harry. God bless you in all that you seek to do.
If you just enjoyed this episode, the chances are that you're going to love other amazing episodes that we've recorded. So don't forget to check that out in the suggestion. And please hit the follow button so that you can keep in touch every time we publish an episode. Down in the description below, you'll find links to really helpful resources and also links to connect with the guest so that you can keep in touch with their amazing work. Like I always say, my friends, cheers to many more years of shamelessly living and crazily excelling in passion and purpose. And I'll speak to you in the next episode.
Faith, you know, we think we might know Jesus and have a good relationship, but there's always more. And I think it's the same for any relationship, and especially for a marriage. There's always more to learn, there's always more understanding to be gained, there's always more forgiveness to accept one with another. I just think, yeah, to be at a place where you think you've arrived would be like a relationship would be stale in that way. I think there has to always be more that you're looking for.
And I think that God's put something in us that has that desire for more, to pursue more, because he is so infinite and so big, and we only get a tiny glimpse of him. And he's put something, it says God put eternity into the hearts of men, it says in the Bible. And I think that something of that eternity, of always being more, always being something to discover, that's true in all areas of life. And that, you know, so many people have dissatisfaction if they get stuck in a rut or the relationship goes stale, because God's given us a desire to pursue more.
Yeah.
More intimacy, more depth, more understanding.
Yeah.
And I think what you say about the relationship getting better, you know, there's all sorts of wiser people than me have spoken on levels of a relationship, you know, that you start off with small talk and then you get into sharing a bit more detail, and you're going up these steps towards a place of, the top step is intimacy, is you know, and we all desire intimacy. But the aspects of relationship, again, wiser men than me have said there are four main areas of relationship: love, trust, respect, and understanding. And I think love is the thing that motivates us to want to get higher up the steps of levels of communication so that we can go for intimacy. Trust is something that's very fragile. It can be broken easily. It takes a long time to build. So time spent together and having relationship together builds the trust, which is a vital part of any relationship. Understanding takes the longest. So the more time we spend with somebody, the more understanding we gain. And very often, the more understanding we have, that develops that more of the motivation to push on towards a greater level of intimacy. Because when people open up to us and we gain understanding, we feel we understand them more. And the cry of the human heart is to be understood. And so there's a wonderful mutuality about developing understanding in a relationship. And respect just grows as you sort of witness how a person lives, their value system. Respect, I think, can be earned, but it doesn't always need to be earned. I think there's a respect for a position or Claire respects me as her husband. That mm-hmm. started way back, but then respect grows as you witness the ethics, morals, and values of a person. You develop a greater respect for them too. But yes, I think relationships do get better with age.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question from a younger generation to an older generation. And we are kids, we're growing up, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I believe that as a kid growing up, every time I have to adopt a value or a virtue for myself, I am also willing to test it with the waters, with experiences, before I decide and go, this is something that I'm going to adopt as a value, because I believe that I'm at a point of growing where I can't just know it all. And so for me, sometimes I feel that even as we start to date, gearing up towards marriage, I still have a traditional perspective of what relationships should look like. And I'm asking because I want to know your perspective on this and what do you think is the right approach, where I believe that in a relationship, which is, I mean, when we talk about dating, definitely leading up to marriage and as well in the marriage, the thing I hear you guys say a lot is that everyone knows their position. And coming back to me making the point of being a traditional person, I think of it as, this is my opinion, I believe that a man should be the leader. But also, I think that the man has to earn the right to live, the right to lead. It is the point where you go, I, Claire, I've seen Dave lead us through several instances, or even just one, two, three, and I go, now I can trust Dave. I can trust that his leadership for us as a team is always going to be the right one. So do you think, as a young person growing up, is that a good approach to have when talking about relationships? Or how do you think that could best approach? And I'm happy to be corrected.
I think it's a biblical model. And I think it's one that gets misunderstood very easily and twisted. Which saddens my heart, because, you know, when the Bible talks about, you know, the husband being the head of the wife, it doesn't mean he's to tell her what to do and boss her about and she's lower than him because he's higher than her. I think that's a really misunderstood concept, and one that saddens me greatly, because I think people think about that and then they think that, you know, it's all about equality. And, you know, and I think when the Bible says that, you know, the man has to love his wife as Christ loves the church, that is a very high calling indeed. And that's not to be taken lightly at all. So I don't see it. I think, yes, I agree with what you're saying. And I don't see it as, you know, the man leads and the man makes all the decisions, because, you know, you are a team together. We see ourselves as a team, very much so. You know, you say, well, does the book stop with Dave? Well, yes, sometimes it would do. But then if I really disagreed with something, we'd talk it through, we'd work it through. We'd pray it through, we'd think, well, you know, what is the sticking point? Why are we having this issue? So we'd be very open to that. But I'm quite comfortable to say that, yes, Dave is the head of the home. But I see that in a very positive light, not a negative one. And like I say, I think it hasn't been twisted in this generation and the other generation as to be something that God never intended it to be.
And if I take my role seriously as head of the home, then I'm going to, you know, as Christ loves the church, or Christ laid down his life. Christ was the servant king. You know, it might say wives submit to your husbands, but I think husbands actually have the harder job in actually loving their wives as Christ loves the church.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to take that seriously, I'm going to approach it seeing Claire as my equal in every way. I'm going to approach it in wanting to serve Claire as Christ serves the church. And that's, as Claire says, it's a high calling. Yeah. And it's a great responsibility that God gives to us as guys. And yeah, I think it is a traditional view. But so all traditions aren't wrong. You know, just because something's traditional, yes, it can be challenged. And it's also worked for millennia. There is an element of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, we follow a traditional model, and who says we've got it right?
But you know, the Bible also says submit to one another, doesn't it? You know, we said that earlier, and I think that is just as important, that, you know, there'd be some things that, you know, I might make a decision on or want to make a decision on, and Dave might not agree with, but he might look at it from my viewpoint and say, okay, well, we'll go with what you say then. That's fine. So it's not always just because it's, you know, submitting to the man because he's the head of the house kind of thing. I just think it doesn't mean we have to always do everything he says and do, you know, follow it all and that sort of thing, because that's not being led, that's being dragged, and that's not what Jesus meant at all when he said that.
And if I'm not taking into consideration what Claire thinks and feels and believes about things when making any kind of decision, and I'm just saying, no, we're doing it this way because this is what I think is right, well, that's not me being a servant to Claire. That's not me submitting to her. So I think there is something in the traditional spiritual responsibility, the kind of the way that God has created us to be. But there's so much about equality that is also in any marriage relationship that cannot be ignored.
I love how you guys break it down. And I would say the final words from me is that leadership is service. Because you, Dave, as you understand your role as the leader, but you understand that in your position as the leader, you are serving. You're serving Claire. Claire also understands that whatever, this also the understanding that whatever Dave is doing is for the good of the team. And again, taking into consideration each other's feeling. I think that I'm having a good conversation. For whoever is going to be watching this, I genuinely think that it's going to be helpful to them just as it is helpful to me. I wanted us to talk about homeschooling. You guys have been homeschooling your kids for the past 23 years.
When did we start? 95. Yeah. And we only educated this up to the end of secondary school, so when the kids were 16. And of course Josh is now 18. Yeah. So that was just 2 years ago we stopped. So yeah, 95 to 21.
How did that idea come about? Well, just walk me through the start of it. Let's talk about even the conversation. How did it come about? Claire, we're going to start homeschooling the kids. How does that conversation start?
Okay, so we were traveling with a youth with a mission, Christian organization, and we were in New Zealand when Jess, our first, turned four. And so I think I'd already started doing some just simple reading and writing with her. She wasn't really due to go to school just yet. And then we moved to the States for a while and met a family who were homeschooling. And like I say, I'd already started doing some basics with Jess. And we met this family who were homeschooling and their kids were teenagers and they seemed to be doing really well. And we wanted to travel more. We wanted to have the flexibility to be able to move about if we wanted to, if we felt God was calling us to do that. And so we began the homeschooling journey. And when we came back to England, we didn't know whether we'd be doing more travelling, so we thought, well, we'll do it for a little while and we'll see how it works. I loved it. I loved, especially the early years. It was just such a joy for me to do that. So I was doing the majority of it in the early years. And then when Rachel was born, our second daughter, we thought, well, it worked for the first one. Let's keep going. And we prayed about it every time. You know, God, is this right? I believe when you enter homeschooling, it has to be a calling. It has to be a strong calling to do so, because it's not always easy. You know, it's a huge commitment. Not just the preparing the lessons and the finding the resources, but the teaching and the giving them the time to do that. And I look back over the 25 years and think, oh, would I have done it differently? And I think there might have been some things I did slightly differently, but I would definitely have done it again. Obviously, 25 years ago, there wasn't the same sort of resources there are now online, and you know, all the sort of digital stuff that you can get your hands on now is very, very different to how we started. There was no financial help at all, so there was no support in that way. But that didn't stop us doing what we wanted to do. We just made the decision that this is what we want to do. You know, it was always something that was a decision that we made as a family before the Lord. And none of them ever said they wanted to go to school. And you could say, well, they didn't know what school was like, so they didn't really know what choice they had to make, you know. But we tried to make it as open for them as we could to make that decision. And they all chose to be homeschooled. So, yeah.
Was any part of this decision ever motivated by the fact that you didn't want your kids to learn some certain things in a general education, like in a general education setting?
I think yes. Certainly there was an element. I wouldn't be able to put a percentage on it, but I think there was certainly part of the decision was, you know, we just don't want to buy into the same sort of world value system of you're only a good person if you're productive. You know, that's you know, what the schools teach about productivity, and I think it comes from top down. It comes from government. It comes
when they're older. I think when they're little, not so. But
you know, our most nations' economy is based on how productive a nation is, right? So we're almost sort of caught in a hamster wheel. We've got to keep the economy going, and so we've got to be productive. And the push to get mums out to work and provide childcare. But we certainly, when we were considering it and putting it before the Lord and praying about it, we certainly felt that the character of our kids was far more important than any academic achievement that they might have. And that's what we felt. You know, God created family for a reason. He put children into families. He gave us our four children for a purpose, for a reason. And so we wanted to pursue the very best that we believed we could give to our kids. And I think it's always the very best we can give to our kids is always going to come from parents who are submitting to God himself and saying, what do we do and how do we do it? Did we make mistakes? Yeah, absolutely. But we did the best that we felt we needed to do at the time. And I think that's part of the human experience, isn't it? You know, we live life, we make mistakes, we do everything right? No, we do the best. We do what we believe is right at the time. And God is big enough and gracious enough to lead us on and to teach us and to take us round the mountain again if we need to learn it again. for sure, there's an element of, I want to protect my kids. You know, any parent who never has a feeling of wanting to protect their kids, there's probably something wrong going on in their childhood, I would think. Because that's a huge part of what a parent is protection. But of course, there is such a thing as overprotection, which is why when Claire says if you're going to homeschool, it's not just about wrapping your kids in cotton wool and protecting them from the big bad world out there. because you've got to prepare them for the big bad world, because one day they're going to live in it. Yeah. We're big fans of intergenerational, you know, everything can be intergenerational. Intergenerational learning is absolutely amazing. You know, you see sometimes, where is it in the Netherlands, where they mix like kindergarten yeah. kids with old people and living in old people's homes, and they kind of learn together and have fun together, and it clearly has a massive impact on their mental health and their development. So, you know, I think just putting people in their own age group and expecting them to learn what they need to learn to prepare them for life, I think that's a faulty idea.
Totally agree, because I think even personally, I've had instances of someone say, I think you've been mingling with older people or with elder people. I'm like, yeah. I get it. That's where that comes from. And they are good compliments, to be honest, but I could also tell in that moment that that's not something that I just learned from my peers. It came from interacting with elderly people and also just being open to interact with different people. Let's talk about the curriculum for what you guys were teaching them. How do you know what to teach them? Where do you find it? And what's that process like?
Well, the primary years are much easier.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need equipment and all of the textbooks and all of that necessarily. But, you know, when we started, the internet did actually exist. So, you know.
All those years ago.
You know, we had little boxes that made funny noises when you wanted to access the internet, but the old dial-up. But it did exist, and there were resources that were put on there by the Department for Education. They would publish the entire primary curriculum and secondary curriculum as far as the Department of Education were concerned. It was, the information was there. We never really wanted to create super kids. We never wanted to sort of create big-brained, you know, incredibly academic. We just wanted them to know, you know, if they had an idea of sort of a life they wanted to pursue, a career they wanted to pursue, how do we prepare them for that?
Yeah.
Which of course is the basis of a comprehensive education, is to give a broad base so that kids have the understanding to choose what they want to do and what they want to pursue and work out what they love doing and what they're good at.
Do you mind me asking, where does that come from? Because generally, every parent wants their kids to be, every parent is like, the kid has to grow to become a genius and all that. Where does that come from? With you, with the way you sound, it looks like you've done a lot of introspection and I don't want to raise super kids, but I want to raise okay kids. Where does that mentality come from?
I think I've seen lots of people, so lots of our friends have kids that have gone through school and they've been bullied and found things really, really difficult. And we wanted to give our kids a love of learning rather than striving for excellence. And some people might say that that's...
No, striving for excellence is good.
No, but perfection. Yeah, sorry, so striving for perfection. And so, you know, we really wanted to give them lots of different experiences as they learnt, and you know, we took them through lots of different projects and history and geography and science and all the subjects they would have learnt at school. So we tried to make as broad an education as we could within the home. Sometimes we pulled other people in to help with different things at different times. But yeah, we wanted it to make it, and you know, lifestyle, we believe in lifestyle discipleship. So, you know, we might be in the middle of the day and I might receive a phone call that, you know, somebody's sick and they had to go to hospital. So I just stopped what we were doing. We just gather around and we pray. And then, okay, then we get on with the rest of whatever we were doing. I think it gave us space to be able to, yeah, do things like stop and talk about things when issues arose. Because, you know, often when you hear of kids that have gone to school and they'll come home and, you know, say, oh, what did you do today? You know, what happened? And they just sort of say, stuff, you know, and that seems to be the common phrase. And sometimes they can tell you details and tell you things that happened, but for us it worked for us. It's not for everybody.
I think it's the pressure thing that we wanted to avoid. And as Claire said, that phrase love of learning, that became the basis of everything that we did, certainly in the early years, trying to lay a foundation of, if our kids don't learn everything that they need when we're teaching them, we want them to love learning enough to pursue it and go after it themselves, to know where to find the information, how to learn it. And if they love learning, then they're going to do that. And, it's a lifelong learning experience, isn't it? That's what life is. It's all about learning.
When you choose to embark on a journey like that, it has, just as it has its social implications, there is also the financial implications on the family, because you go, well, I was supposed to be working with this time, and instead of working, I have to take the kids on this lesson. So how did you guys approach that, and how do you think you successfully handled the part of the finances?
That's probably the way that we were brought up. Both of us had parents who were quite careful with money. We come from a generation where if you can't afford to buy it, then you don't buy it, apart from the big things like a house. And that's how we've lived our lives. We've lived them quite frugally. We haven't gone on expensive holidays, not because we couldn't, but because we made the genuine heartfelt choice that's a sacrifice we're willing to make so that we can live a different way. And the time, of course, is you make a choice. It's time or it's money. Am I going to spend my life work so that I have enough money I can then pay tutors to educate my kids? And we were fortunate enough to be led into career paths where we could be flexible with time. I ended up working in the care sector, working in a children's home.
But you chose to work less hours.
And I negotiated, instead of working 40 hours a week, I negotiated 30 hours a week. Mm-hmm. But I also worked weekends, which meant that I was around during the week to be engaged with the education of our kids.
But it also meant that we had a lower wage than we would normally have had, and so we just lived accordingly. So, we shop carefully and, buy things, mend things, and just living a lifestyle that wasn't all about money and the next best, the newest thing. But I don't feel we ever went without, or the kids ever went without anything, because they chose to work less hours. I think God really blessed us in that decision to not pursue a career, and not for Dave not to climb up the career ladder and be working loads of overtime and hours, so he wasn't at home. He deliberately chose to work less hours to spend more time at home with the family, because that's the most important thing for us, to be able to invest into the kids while they're little. Because often people sort of say, when the kids are young, they work really hard and they earn, like Dave said, earn loads of money, and then they've got lots of money. But then you find, well, by the time you've earned all that money, you haven't got a relationship with your kids. Your kids have grown up, they're ready to leave home, and you don't have a relationship with them. But look, hey, you've got lots of money, but you've not got anybody to spend it on.
I wanted to ask if you, this is a two-ball question. If you look at your kids vis-a-vis other kids that you around you, are there any differences you kind of realize? And then the second part of the question is, if someone says to you, Dave and Claire, if you guys were to go back and relive this experience again of bringing up these children in a homeschool manner, what would you change about that experience and the approach you took to it?
When our second daughter, Rachel, went to college, she'd been homeschooled. She was a good student, and she went to college, and there would be other kids in the class, young adults, I should say, because they'd be 17. Yeah. There'd be young adults in the class, and they'd be on their phones, and they'd be chatting to one another, and she would get really frustrated with them. That, we're here to learn. Why can't you be quiet? You're disrupting my learning experience. Mm. And I don't think she made any great friends doing that, but but that was certainly a difference, because she had the love of learning.
What would you change about the experience, about the approach?
It's difficult. I think, I guess maybe if they were older, I might have tried to give them more experiences outside of the home. You know, things like science, for instance, we weren't able to do very many experiments. I mean, we did the best that we could with the equipment that we had in the home. But I guess they missed out on things like, you know, big exciting science experiments, PE, so physical education. You know, we did stuff with them. We took them swimming and things like that. And they were involved. Like the girls did dance classes, and then Joel did gymnastics, and Jock did football and things like that. So we tried to do some things with them.
They didn't do a lot of team sports.
No, they didn't do a lot of team sports. So that's probably something that they missed out on, I guess. So if I could go back and do it again, I'd perhaps try and maybe mix with other sports, try and find other sports things that they could do to mix more in that sort of a way.
I think one thing I might change is to develop a loose curriculum of faith that you could weave into the home education experience as well. That would be a bit more deliberate. I think we focused on the experience, so giving them experience of mission and giving them experience of worship, giving them experience of Christian leadership, creating that environment where faith could grow. But there wasn't, I don't think, that we were particularly deliberate about how we approached their discipleship. We kind of went with the flow and then dealt with things as they came up.
I guess we lived it more than we taught it, and so I guess that's good. But maybe it wasn't balanced enough with the teaching of what we believe. So we lived our faith, but whether we taught it enough, I don't know.
There was a foundation of experience.
Yeah.
And then, well, okay, how do we interpret that? How does God help us interpret that in the light of the experience, rather than the foundation of, you know, these are the foundational Christian principles that we need, and then how do we experience that?
So I have a junior sister and a junior brother. That's a bit of my story. And I'm not their parents. My parents are still, to still bring them up in the way they should. But I'm very much involved in their upbringing, a lot of it. And even in the aspect of helping them acquire skills I'm very much active when it comes to how I want them to grow up as well, because I see it as my responsibility as a senior brother who is at least being exposed to life in a different way than my parents have been, to hold their hands through. And in my experience dealing with both of them, and I will share just personally, because I'm building up towards the question. When something happens to my junior sister, and I approach it differently to how I would approach it if it happened to my junior brother. Sometimes, let's say, for example, he calls me, he needs X amount of money, and I would tell him to go out and work. My junior brother, I ask him, go out and work. You're a man. You have to face life. It has to hit you. You have to get to the point where you push your limits, because life will hit you. You go out there, you have to struggle. But my junior sister, I need money for X and X. The first thing is, what's the last money I gave you? I have used all this. Okay, how do we get more for you? How do you approach bringing up the children? As your kids were growing up, what's one value first that you wanted to impart into them? But most importantly, what was the approach to raising the girl child vis-a-vis the approach to raising the boy child?
I think it is very different, very clearly. I think one of the things that we really wanted to instill in our girls is to give them a good role model of what it is to have. So like our relationship between Dave and I, that we're the same inside the house as we are outside the house, and we were the same in front of the kids as we were, you know, when we were on our own. And just the way that we love each other, we wanted to really show that to them and live that. And that's what we did. We didn't try to do that. We just did that. And I think that gave them a really good value as to this is how a woman should be treated by a man. Because I think often in the, you know, you can go out into the world and it's not like that at all. So we wanted to set that precedent of you know, this is how you should be treated, with respect, with love, with honor, with dignity, with compassion and tenderness, you know, all those things that come from God. We wanted to show the girls especially that that's how you treat a woman. And also, as we were doing that, we were showing the boys, you know, if and when you get married, or when and yeah. if you get married, you know, we want you to treat your wives, you know, like dad has treated mom. So yes, I think it is different but kind of similar in that respect, if that would say.
Yeah, I think it perhaps goes slightly in line with your question about traditional roles as well. But, you know, are we perpetuating the traditional roles by teaching our boys to be, you know, be a man? And, you know, I think there are specific roles that God gives to males and specific roles that God gives to females. And that doesn't mean that the females can't make logical,
sensible
decisions. You know, it doesn't mean that guys have to ignore their emotions and that girls are always emotional. You know, that's one of the things that's often thrown out. Well, no, we're equal. There is an equality, but we are wired differently. You know, we do have, generally speaking, we do have our brains operate differently. And you could argue, well, that's part of the traditional. That's what we've been brainwashed with. Is it nature or is it nurture? That's a bigger argument, right? But yeah, I think we do treat our girls and our boys differently. And I think there's something in that as a father, rightly or wrongly, I wanted my boys to understand the responsibility of being a guy, that actually you can express compassion and you don't have to always think about things logically. You can be a guy who has feelings too. So yeah, I think we did do them differently. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any other differences, to be honest.
As you were talking, your answer led me to think not just about how we should raise them, but also the role that the father as well as the mother plays in the upbringing of a child, which I think is very important. And I could say this from experience, because my parents are together, because I see them, just like Claire mentioned, the way that my father, my dad treats my mom. When I go, I want to treat my wife that way, because I look at the bond that exists between them. And without them ever asking me, without them ever saying anything like, this is how you should treat the ladies in your life, I just watch and I see, I'm like, this is what I want to do. And I think that's so profound. But I wanted to ask you, rounding this off, I wanted to ask you guys, Claire, and I'm also very aware that you're very much involved in, you have heart for marriages and families to become equipped and strengthened to move forward in all that God has for them. But in your work with most of these marriages, what's the biggest misconception you probably come across with marriages, and how do you think this could be approached differently?
I think I would say that I often find that couples miss each other. So they just, you know, relationally, in conversation, they just seem to come together, but just at a slightly different level, and they just miss each other. And I think one of the things, when Dave was talking about the love, trust, respect and understanding, and I think understanding takes a long time, and sometimes we want to understand somebody straight away and we want to get it. And I think it's being prepared to be in it for the long haul, if you like, to be able to take time to understand and not to just jump to conclusions. And you know, today we live in a society where people don't have a lot of time to stop, sit down, talk together about things, because everything is very snappy and quick, and we're on to the next thing, and then tomorrow we're doing this, and next week we're doing this, and you know. But if we don't take time to stop and talk, that's when people miss each other. And I think the more you miss each other, then that's when the, you know, things get in between the relationship.
There are so many tools that we've sort of gathered over the years from much cleverer people than us that, that what Claire said about missing each other, and we talked about gender stereotypes a little bit there, and I think generally speaking, guys tend to be quite topical when they're discussing something. They want to stay on subject. If there's a problem, they want to fix it. They stay on a topical level, and generally speaking, the gals will go on a relational level. The woman may say, "Oh, I had a terrible day today." The guy wants to get in there, hear about it, fix it, work out the problem, and fix it.
And actually, move on.
All she wants to do is be heard.
Just listen.
Yeah. So that missing each other is so Claire's so right in what she says about that, and that's why communication is so crucial. That we printed out a picture of a floor on a little card, and we've given it to some couple and said, when you have a discussion, just hold that so that you don't butt in on each other and talk over each other. So the person who's holding, you have the floor, and you hand it to the other person when you finish talking, and then you be quiet and listen to what the other person is saying. So communication is absolutely critical. Taking time, you have to develop, you have to invest. If you want anything to get better, you have to invest in it. And when you first meet someone that you're attracted to, or you feel this might be the person I want to spend the rest of my life with, you don't just sort of go through the motions. You chase after them. You find out what they like. You want to get their attention by giving them what they like, by being funny, why can't that carry on through a relationship? Why can't that carry on in marriage? I think we think, now we're married, we don't have to go to the effort. No, I'm sorry. If you want a relationship to improve, you have to put the effort and the time in to make it improve. And again, there's so many resources. The Alpha Marriage course is great in just learning some of those basics of conflict resolution and communication. There's so many good resources out there, and we've we don't use it as often as we should, but there's an app called Toucan, which kind of takes a pulse of your relationship. It does it separately, and then it shares the results and says, "Why don't you take a look at this little video about conflict resolution? Because it seems like that's an area that needs some development." Just taking the time to say, and having the humility to say, "Should we give this a try? Because it might just improve our relationship." And we're always saying, there's always room for improvement. Yeah.
Absolutely.
We have a tradition on most of the interviews we've been doing recently, and it's asking our guests the final question. When all is said and done, how do you want to be remembered as Dave and as Claire? I'll let you guys take a few seconds to answer individually.
I think for me, I want to be remembered as somebody who lived their life for Jesus. And I think in that, somebody who loves well, somebody who serves well, somebody who's fun, somebody who's generous in not financially necessary, but in time and with who they are and what they have. That's how I want to be remembered.
I'm really moved by a song, I think it's by Casting Crowns, called Only Jesus. And I don't want to sound holier than thou or, some kind of super righteous, but I'm so moved by this song that the chorus says, I don't want to leave a legacy. I don't care if they remember me, only Jesus. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm not that bothered about people remembering me. But if there was anything, it would be Dave was somebody who was a signpost to Jesus. Would be a wonderful way.
Dave and Claire, I want to thank you guys for bringing all this wealth of experience. I've enjoyed this conversation, and I truly have a lot to take away from it. And I want to say thank you for accepting to do this and for sharing selflessly. I do appreciate you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. With all of our faults and failures, we don't have all the answers. Many of the things that we've done and said, we've made many, many mistakes. But yeah, thank you for having us. We really appreciate your questions and your heart to help others.
Yeah, thank you, Ari. God bless you in all that you seek to do.
If you just enjoyed this episode, the chances are that you're going to love other amazing episodes that we've recorded. So don't forget to check that out in the suggestion. And please hit the follow button so that you can keep in touch every time we publish an episode. Down in the description below, you'll find links to really helpful resources and also links to connect with the guest so that you can keep in touch with their amazing work. Like I always say, my friends, cheers to many more years of shamelessly living and crazily excelling in passion and purpose. And I'll speak to you in the next episode.